You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 23rd of February 2022, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I have to apologise for a couple of mistakes I made yesterday when I was talking about Ukraine and Russia. When I'm just talking like that, which is just a stream of consciousness, often I get words mixed up, and I believe I referred to Ukraine as Poland. I talked about World War One when I meant to be referring to World War Two. Hopefully the context of what I was saying made it clear the words that I got mixed up. And just thinking some more about that today, it really does seem to me as if what's at the root of this is Nord Stream 2. I mean, Germany said to Russia, well, we will get together with you and we'll set up this pipeline so that we can get cheaper Russian gas into Europe, because at the time it had to pass through Ukraine and Ukraine was refusing to pay for it. So there were massive debts that Ukraine built up with Russia, and Germany wanted to bypass Ukraine. So Russia set up this pipeline. America did not like this at all. America said, you are not allowed to do this. We're not going to allow you to do this, Germany. And Germany said, well, we really need this gas. We are going to go ahead with this. And I think what happened then, America said, right. And then they told Ukraine to start provoking Russia, and Ukraine started bombing the Donbass region. And then Putin is left with a bit of a quandary there, isn't he? Does he go in there to rescue the Russian people in Ukraine and protect them from the bombing? Or does he stay in Russia and think, well, we've got to get this pipeline going, we've got to make this money for Russia? Does he think about the economy, or does he think about the people? And America knows that Putin is going to think about the people. And I guess they're looking at that as Putin's weak spot is his love for the Russian people. So they took advantage of his weak spot. They provoked him. Russia went into Donbass to secure the place so that there was no more bombs raining down on the heads of the people that live there. And straight away, of course, that's Putin invading Ukraine, isn't it? And the first thing Germany does is say, right, that's it, we're putting a stop on the Nord Stream 2 project. So America has got their way. And I guess there's two things really we can learn from this Ukraine situation. And the first one is that having a love for his people has really been turned into a weak point for Putin. And I'm not quite sure what we can do about that. I mean, that might be the reason why our governments don't really show any concern for us, because they see it as a weak spot there that could be taken advantage of, as it has been taken advantage of in this situation. And the second point, it follows on from something I was saying yesterday about how these quote unquote neo-Nazi groups in Ukraine were funded by the West to take down the pro-Russian government, so that the country could then be taken over by America. And a lot of the time in nationalism, we say, well, wouldn't it be great if we could get some funding from Russia, because we don't have any funds in our movement. But what happened in Ukraine is really a cautionary tale. You really should not accept money from foreign sources, because the foreign sources will just be using you to weaken your own nation, no matter how it appears. I mean, that was the end result in Ukraine. So two surprising things to come from this. As I say, the first one is that actually having a love for your people can be exploited and can be turned against you, as it was turned against Putin. And the second thing is that no matter how short of funds we become as nationalists, we should never accept funding from another country, basically, because they will just be using us to weaken our own country. And what comes after that is going to be worse than what was there before. What they have in Ukraine now is far worse than what they had before. It's always better the devil you know. Very old proverb there. Well, I've got some news that I want to get into today. And there's a news story which is doing the rounds at the moment. And everybody is looking at this and saying, what a crazy person this is. How ridiculous is this? A white doctor stabbed 9 times by a stranger of colour has said he is not angry with his attacker. Dr. Adam Towler was dragged from his house and attacked by Chans Maximen in Clifton, Bristol in 2019. At the end of Maximen's trial, Dr. Towler read out a witness impact statement saying, I don't think you owe me an apology. Maximen, now 19, was jailed for life at Bristol Crown Court this week for that attack and for 2 others. When he was 17, he chose Dr. Towler at random and left him bleeding in the street in October 2019. The trial heard Dr. Towler initially thought it was a Halloween prank when Maximen knocked on his door, but he was then dragged into the street and stabbed multiple times. In his witness statement to the court, Dr. Towler said he felt a sense of connection with Maximen. He added, I feel bad that I had this great freedom, but you didn't. I wondered if you had just made a mistake, albeit a big one, or been unlucky. Talking further on BBC's Radio 4 Today programme on Friday, Dr. Towler elaborated by saying, I got lucky. I'm living a quite normal life, a comfortable life. My immediate outlook is rather more comfortable than Chans Maximen's position. One of the things about this is the randomness. No one knows what he thought, what he does think. No one knows if he'll ever be judged safe to return to society. But his whole life turned on that event. Prior to that, there was no mental history. He was on a good course, and that may be difficult for him. During the unprovoked attack, Maximen had said, you killed the girl, a phrase that has never been explained and that meant nothing to the victim or the investigators. Neither of us can unwind the clock on those events, so now I have the rest of my life before me, and he does too. I know it is difficult for his family, who have supported him with great tenacity and loyalty through the legal process, added Dr. Towler. In his victim statement, he expressed concern for the defendant and his future. A jury found Maximen, who also stabbed a man walking home from a night shift and also tried to break into the house of a young woman, guilty of attempted murder, GBH, and 3 counts of possessing a bladed article. Jailing him for life with a minimum term of 12 years on Wednesday, Judge William Hart praised Dr. Towler's response to the disturbing attack, saying, whether it is the effect of intellect or faith or kindness and understanding, I do not know. If it is the consequence of intellect, I admire it. If it is the consequence of faith, I envy it. And on the surface there, you would look at that and you think, well, how ridiculous. This guy just stabbed you for no reason at all. Why don't you bear any animosity to him? And the problem is, if you bear animosity to people, if you start hating people, then it eats you up and it turns you into a not very nice person. And in situations like this, you have to just hand it over to the courts to deal with. It's not like this victim here is saying, well, the attacker shouldn't be punished. He is saying, I am giving up responsibility for that punishment to the court, and I don't want to be eaten up with hate for this person myself. So he is essentially saying that he's not owed an apology. He's not saying that he's forgiven him or anything like that. He says that he has compassion for the man because his life is now ruined. And also there's obviously something deeply wrong there, which really does show the best of white people, how white people are. But at the same time, this also gets taken advantage of, doesn't it? This is why we're in the situation that we are in. And I know people look at this and think that this guy is absolutely crazy, but I think he's having to give up this feeling of hatred because he doesn't want to be eaten up by it. He's just handed it over to the court. And the thing that we really should take away from this is that if it wasn't for multiculturalism, he would never have been stabbed in the first place. And clearly Dr. Towler has not thought along those lines. He probably thinks, well, there's nothing we can do about that. That's just a risk that we take, is that somebody might attack you. But the fact of the matter is that it was somebody from another ethnicity that attacked him. And up until 70 years ago, we didn't have people from other ethnicities living in our country. The only reason why we have it now is because we changed our immigration policy and our elected representatives decided that multiculturalism would be a good thing for us and that they would invite people over from the other side of the world. And if you are of a criminal mind, it is always going to be easier for you to commit crimes against another ethnic group rather than your own ethnic group. So it basically provides situations where crimes can take place, are more likely to take place. So we do end up with more crime, I think, in multicultural areas just because there's more chances for it to occur, because there's more potential victims for the criminal-minded types. And I think this goes for all ethnicities. And of course, on top of that, you also get the difference in the amount of crime that is carried out by the different ethnic groups, and it does vary, and it does seem to be related to the average IQ. And I doubt very much whether Dr. Towler has thought about any of these things. He is just thinking, well, I've been stabbed. I have no idea why this person stabbed me. I did not bear him any malice before he did stab me. I am still alive. This man is now in prison. His life is completely messed up. And this is the way that he is looking at it. And it's just such a tragedy that things like this actually do occur. And they do occur. And each time they occur, and it's essentially a multicultural killing, you know that would never have happened if it wasn't for multiculturalism. And I don't think we should be trying not to have sympathy for people and not looking at things objectively, because that is one of the great things about white people, is that we show sympathy and we show understanding, and we can put ourselves into other people's shoes and we can be objective about things. And I think being objective about things is one of the ways that, or one of the things that we really need to work on in nationalism. We need to look at the situation that we are in, and we need to look at it not just from our point of view, but we need to look at it from these other groups' point of view and why they do the things that they do. And we need to be pointing out how multiculturalism doesn't just badly affect us, it also badly affects them. I mean, we can use the sort of things that Jews talk about, for instance. If we look at what Jews talk about, they have a fear of white people. They've been pogromed so many times. They've been kicked out of so many countries. And to them, it just appears as if they're just being, all of this is happening just because they're being themselves. And I would agree, all of this is happening because they're just being themselves. But the solution to that isn't to make laws to prevent people from talking about it. The solution to that is to have an end to multiculturalism. The Jews could never be pogromed again if there was an end to multiculturalism. There would be no such thing as anti-Semitism if we didn't have multiculturalism. It really does harm all the different ethnic groups. And I think when we look at it objectively, we can see that, and we can talk about it in an objective way that cannot be described as inciting hate against anyone, because it's looking for what is in the best interests of everyone. Nationalism really is in the best interests of every people group. And when you start out in nationalism, of course, you mainly think about your own people group and what's good for your own people group. But when you, after you've been involved in it for a while, you can see that it's the best way to be for literally for every people group. And that's what the instinct is. that's why we have black people saying, well, I feel uncomfortable if there isn't a black person on the interview panel for a job. It's because naturally they feel more at home with their own people. And we're being told this, and we're being told, well, we have to put more black people on the interview panel because of that. But it works the same way around. If there's a white person that's going for a job, and there's a lot of black people on the interview panel, they're going to think, well, I'm not going to be given the job, because they're just going to want to give it to their own people. It cuts both ways in all of this. And at the root of it is this policy of multiculturalism that we seem to have fallen for, the majority of us, at any rate. And it's all because of our elected representatives. It's not because any of these groups have forced their way into the country, or forced their way into politics, or forced their way into the media. We willingly handed all these things over to them. So that's really my views on this doctor here. I don't think he's insane. I think he's just trying to look at it from an objective point of view. And he's not saying that the attacker should not be punished. He's just saying that he has been punished for this by the courts, and I accept that punishment, and I am not going to tear myself up wishing revenge upon this person. I mean, if you're a Christian, you believe that vengeance is the Lord's. It's not up to us to take vengeance. It's not up to us to take revenge. It's up to God to do that. And God instituted the state and instituted the law, and it's the state that has to carry out that. Effectively, if somebody kills somebody else, the state is supposed to then execute them. It's supposed to be blood for blood. But it's not supposed to be the person that's been attacked that goes out and does that. It's supposed to be carried out by the state under the law. And I think this doctor, that's what he is saying, is that this punishment has been carried out by the courts. He himself does not bear this person any malice at all. And he doesn't understand why this person did this. And because he did, it's essentially ruined his life. But the way that we would look at this as nationalists is to say, well, that never would have happened if it wasn't for multiculturalism, would it? And nobody can argue against that and say, oh, yes, well, it would have happened, because quite clearly it could not have happened if it wasn't for that. And if we look at countries that don't have multiculturalism or don't have it to the extent that we do, we see that they hardly have any attacks like this. I mean, just look at Iceland. Just a few years back, Iceland never even had any murders in every year. And Iceland is the least multicultural of all the countries in Europe. Moving on to another piece of news here. And this is something that somebody was bringing up to me the other day. What has happened to the people that were accused of killing Sasha Johnson? And Sasha Johnson was the prominent Black Lives Matter campaigner that was in the news last year, who ended up being shot. And I did a podcast on her, and I was pointing out that what she's doing is exactly right. She's advocating for her people. She's doing what is best for her people. And by doing so, she highlights these problems with multiculturalism. The issue I have is the way that we deal with these things as white people. I certainly don't have an issue with anybody black that is campaigning for what is best for black people. Well, it seems that the trial has fallen apart. The prosecution of four men accused over the shooting of black equal rights campaigner Sasha Johnson at a 30th birthday party in May 2021 has collapsed. Now, they call her a black equal rights campaigner. Why do they not refer to us as white equal rights campaigners? Why is it that we have speech laws that prevent us as white people from critiquing aspects of these other groups, unless we do it in objective and supportive ways, and yet they can critique us in any way that they like? Why is it that when crimes are carried out, if you're a member of an ethnic minority and you say, well, there was an element of race involved in this crime, why is it that for the same crime, the person that carried out is going to get two or three times the prison sentence for exactly the same crime? I mean, that shows that we are not equal under the law. That shows that if you're a member of a minority, you are considered of more value to the state and the legal system than if you are not of an ethnic minority or any other minority with protected characteristics. So essentially, because we have divided society up into these minority groups, we no longer have equal rights. So I would suggest that what she was campaigning for was for more influence and more power for black people, not equal rights. And I would say that that is the exact thing that you would expect a healthy black person to do with a healthy sense of ethnicity and of belonging to their people. What is unhealthy is that we don't see white people doing that. We see white people joining in with the Black Lives Matter campaign and essentially putting black lives ahead of their own and making them out to be more important than their own, which is not a good thing. That's maladaptive. We should be looking out for our own interests. But getting back to this article here about the shooting, Miss Johnson, a mother of two, was shot in the head during a silent disco at a house party in Peckham, South London, early on Sunday, May 23rd last year. And I guess a silent disco is when you're all listening to your own music through headphones. Four men, Prince Dixon, 25, of Gravesend, Kent, Troy Reed, 20, of Southwark, Cameron D. Riggs, 19, of Lewisham, and Devontae Brown, 19, of Southwark or Southwark, were all due to stand trial at the Old Bailey next month. And we can tell, of course, by their names that they were all black. They were all part of her own ethnicity. They faced charges of conspiracy to murder over Miss Johnson's shooting and allegations of possession of a firearm and ammunition with intent to endanger life. So the police must have had some circumstantial evidence for this. However, at a hearing on Tuesday, prosecutor Mark Hayward QC announced that the whole criminal case was being abandoned after a CPS review. Miss Johnson, 28, an outspoken advocate for black equality rights, a founding member of the Taking the Initiative Party, and a prominent figure in the Black Lives Matter movement, was initially described as being in critical condition in hospital. And just one aspect of that sentence there, that she was a founding member of the Taking the Initiative Party. She was allowed to form a party that was specifically aimed at just doing things for black people, basically. It was a party that was based around the black ethnicity. And she was allowed to do that. And as Patriotic Alternative, we wish to form a party that is based around trying to ensure that the Indigenous British people remain a supermajority in Britain. And we are constantly being told that we can't do that. So again, we see that there isn't this equality there. If you want to speak up for your people and you're a minority, that's encouraged. If you want to speak up for your people and you're the Indigenous British, that is not encouraged. She continues to receive treatment in hospital, but her condition is now said to be serious but stable. I mean, it's very doubtful that she will ever be able to take a position leading her party again. And it's a great shame, really, because she was, you know, she was a good spokesman for her community. And it's just so sad that it's her own community that have ended up shooting her. And I can't recall whether I've ever heard of anyone white going to a party and getting shot. But we do often hear in America of black people going to black parties and they just seem to end up getting shot for some reason. A trial of the four men had been scheduled for March 7th. Mr. Justice Hilliard QC recorded formal not guilty verdicts against the defendants after the prosecution offered no evidence. And it is very mysterious here why this was stopped, basically. In the aftermath of the shooting, police officers had established that Sasha had been at a party at a house on Consort Road in Peckham early on Sunday morning. Around 3 a.m., a group of four black males dressed in dark-coloured clothing entered the garden of the property and discharged a firearm. They had left the scene before officers arrived. We are aware of Sasha's involvement in the BLM movement in the UK, and I understand the concern this will cause to some communities. However, I wish to stress that at this time there is nothing to suggest Sasha was the victim of a targeted attack. And of course, at the time, there were lots of attempts in the media to portray this as a white supremacist attack on this woman. But why would a white supremacist, or basically when they say white supremacist, they just mean nationalist. Why would a nationalist wish harm upon a nationalist from another community. And it doesn't make sense, does it? Because if it's a nationalist from another community, they're doing their best for their group. That's exactly what they should be doing. That's what we want to be doing for our own group. And that's what we want these other groups to be doing. That's what we want people from these other groups to be doing. We want black people to be aware of their ethnicity. We want them to be proud of it. We want them to be standing up for their people, the same as we want white people to be proud of their ethnicity and standing up for their own people. So why would she be a target for nationalists? She wouldn't be a target for nationalists. And what's happened here is that she's accidentally been shot, I guess, by her own ethnic group. The reason for today's decision was not disclosed in open court, but Mr. Haywood said the prosecution had been left with no alternative other than dropping the case. The senior prosecutor told the court the incident was a deliberate shooting at partygoers at the Peckham home when four males in balaclavas had approached the house and discharged a weapon at guests, with one round striking Miss Johnson in the head at very close range. It was said there had been a falling out and hostility between D. Riggs and Brown and the two youngest occupants of the house, who were aged 18. There had been previous incidents, and a panic alarm had been installed at the family home just days before, the court heard. I mean, was it really very sensible to be holding a party at a home that had a panic alarm installed in it because there had been threats? Access to the party was restricted by security at a side gate, and one of the attackers was carrying a handgun, probably a Glock, loaded with 9mm bullets, the court heard. So the attackers were probably known to the people in the party, and that's why they were able to get in, if they had security there. Mr. Haywood said during the confrontation, a single shot was discharged after a reload. That discharged round struck Sasha Johnson, then aged 27, at very close range. Miss Johnson was present as a close friend of the family living there. She was then in a relationship with the oldest son. She suffered a penetrating wound to the side of the head and remains in hospital with catastrophic permanent damage as a result, Mr. Haywood said. And quite clearly, she was not the target for this, but they've ended up really taking out a very effective voice for their own community here. And just the use of guns to solve arguments, that's another thing that is associated with this community, isn't it? I mean, we have Trident. They used to be called the Black Gun Crime Unit, I believe. And the shootings that go on in Britain, most of them, I believe, are concerned with this community. And of course, that's not to incite hate against them, because as we see here, they are the biggest victims of gun crime. Is the same community that are the biggest perpetrators of it. He said the case against the defendants for an alleged conspiracy was based on circumstantial evidence, and there was no direct evidence identifying any of them. The core evidence came from contact with each other, phone data, and their movements, the court heard. The prosecutor made clear that there was nothing to suggest Miss Johnson was targeted because of her anti-racism campaigning and involvement in the BLM movement. So if what she was doing was anti-racism by sort of campaigning for her people, basically, why are we not classed as an anti-racism movement as well, as nationalists and Indigenous British? Because that's what we're campaigning against. We're campaigning against discrimination against the Indigenous British. And we're saying we understand that these other groups think they're being discriminated against, and we think the best way to solve that would be for us all to live in our own separate communities, the same as we see happening in nature. And we are basically just suggesting different solutions to the same problems that groups like Black Lives Matter are identifying. And yet we get ostracized for this. And of course, the reason for that is because our solution would actually work. And for some reason, our elected representatives don't want people to hear the solutions that we propose. They would much rather that people just thought that we hated people because of their skin colour, rather than understand that actually we're very concerned about all people groups, particularly our own, and we're trying to solve the country's problems. Well, to finish up with, we've got a little bit of good news here for free speech. Jack Dee, a famous British comedian, has defended Jimmy Carr after the fellow comedian caused controversy by featuring a joke about the Holocaust in his latest special. And we've discussed this joke a couple of weeks back here at Radio Albion. Carr, known for his stand-up routines and hosting roles on shows like 8 out of 10 Cats, sparked a social media backlash after a clip from Netflix special His Dark Material was widely shared. In the clip, the 49-year-old joked about the horror of the Holocaust and 6 million Jews' lives being lost. That wasn't what he was joking about. The joke was about the gypsies. Before making a remark about the deaths of thousands of gypsies at the hands of the Nazis as part of the punchline. And the punchline was, nobody ever talks about the positive side of things. And obviously the joke there is making a joke about gypsies being seen negatively by people. I mean, it's just highlighting that, isn't it? I don't think he was trying to incite hatred against gypsies. He was trying to highlight the fact that there is a prejudice against gypsies. Following the remarks, anti-hate groups condemned the comic, and Health Secretary Sajid Javid described the joke as horrid. I think we also had Nadine Dorries saying that it should be censored and the Netflix should be fined for this. Now, 60-year-old comedian Jack D has come to his defence. Discussing the outrage around Carr, he said, "These things come round and they go. Jimmy set it up as an unacceptable thing to say. A month later, someone gets hold of it and tried to make a storm out of very little. Do we want the state to intervene on what can be said or not said? I think we do not want that. I think we are sophisticated enough as an audience to discern what we want without calling the cops. A live show is the right arena to do that stuff, because the audience can immediately tell you if they like it or not. I'm not out there to shock anyone, but I'm also not going to cotton wool what I say," he added to Good Morning Britain. So he's making a very good point here, and he seems to be unaware of the laws that we have restricting our speech, because he thinks that the state are not already intervening on what can be said or not said. And the state are intervening on that, and he's making a good point here. We are sophisticated enough as an audience to discern whether we like things or not. And unfortunately now, if you're a nationalist and you make use of the free speech and you talk about things that are going to be of interest to other nationalists and you get accused of incitement to hate, the courts will look at how large your audience is and use that against you, rather than saying, well, there's a large audience here, so clearly they're not going to be listening to somebody if he's making them hate people. They're going to be listening to somebody if they like what they say, not if they're inciting hate. And yet apparently the size of the audience is used as a gauge to increase the punishment of somebody, rather than the size of the audience saying, well, hang on a minute, maybe you are not interpreting this in the way that it should be interpreted. You're not interpreting this in the way that everybody else will interpret it. I mean, what we talk about here at Radio Albion, our listeners don't listen to us because they think we are encouraging them to hate people. Our listeners listen to us because they know that we are objective about things and we are not going to encourage them to hate people. So it's good of Jimmy Carr to point this out and to stand up for his fellow comedian. I would like to see more celebrities standing up for free speech and standing up for people when they get prosecuted for talking about issues that are of importance and interest to the Indigenous British people. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.